Today on Spark, we've been talking about how design can have an impact on our daily messy lives, sometimes for good and sometimes not so much. But what if we took all that design thinking and applied it to our own lives? That's the premise of a new book.
Hi, I'm Bill Burnett.
And I'm Dave Evans, co-author of Designing Your Life, How to Build a Well-Lived and Joyful Life.
Now, obviously, there are plenty of books out there about how to live a happier, more balanced life, but Bill and Dave are taking a design approach.
Design has a lot of different meanings, and most people, when they think of design, probably think of like graphic design or interior design, which is a sort of craft-based education where people learn how to build certain things. At Stanford, we take a little different approach. It's more of an innovation methodology. It's kind of a way to approach problems so that you can come up with creative answers every time.
Coming up with creative answers to our problems every time can seem a bit daunting when most of us are just trying to deal with life on a day-to-day basis.
Life is an interesting problem. It's certainly an ambiguous one. You can't tell the future. You don't really know what's going to happen next. If you make a plan, it probably won't work because reality will, change your plan.
Which is why they decided it would work for the rest of us. Because let's face it, reality, as Bill just said, can really throw a wrench in things. Our best laid plans are often the cause of major stress when they don't turn out quite as we imagined.
Typically, we'd say, okay, I've got my plan all laid out. I know exactly what I'm going for because that clarity is going to get the result I'm looking for, and it will land me in just what it is that I want. And the flaws in those two things are, first of all, people, is there one right answer to your life? Mm-hmm. So the perfect plan, of course, has the perfect outcome. That implies there is a perfect outcome. That's not our experience. People, there are lots of different lives people could lead, and they don't even know exactly which one it is until they get there. So part of that is there's an iterative process just even in defining the outcome. That's thing one about the plan. And thing two about the plan is it never works out the way you thought because we're trying to plan the future over which I'm not yet in control. I keep trying to be in control of the future. It has not worked out for me. So what I need is an approach that's more adaptive. So this design thinking approach, rather than just sit down and analytically come up with a perfect plan, so let's go out into the world and use, empathetic dialogue and curiosity to discover things followed by prototypes to actually experience things and design and build our way forward allows us to increment into or sneak up, as we say, on the future, rather than just sit back and somehow just try to project the future onto a whiteboard and then have it come out perfectly because it never works.
So what would be sort of the habits of mind or general kind of approaches that you would take as you think about designing your life?
Well, we talk about five mindsets of a designer, but the critical ones are curiosity. We're sort of taught in our modern society to be skeptical or rational. And that's fine for some things. But if you're talking about kind of coming up with new ideas for the future, you probably want to start with curiosity. Mm-hmm. Then we like to reframe problems. Oftentimes we find people are working on the wrong problem. And if you're working on the wrong problem, you're probably going to get a wrong answer, right? So reframing problems, opening up the solution space, and then a bias to action, actually trying stuff. There's some things you can plan. I mean, you can plan a dinner party. You can plan things that are short term. But we're not big on passion because it turns out the research says 8 out of 10 people don't have one. They have many.
It's not just me then?
No, it's not.
Pity passion's great. It's just not the place everybody can start.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a lot of what we call dysfunctional beliefs in the book. Have a passion. Well, I don't have one. Okay, there's something wrong with you.
Right.
You were supposed to have it figured out by 25 or 27 or 30. And if you don't, you're late and there's something wrong with you. None of these things are true. If you look at the social science, people don't really figure out who they really are probably till their mid-30s. Nowadays. And even then, who they are will change as they grow and learn new things, or they have a career and they kind of get tired of it and they want another one. And so curiosity, reframe the problem, have a bias to action, and then radical collaboration. Go out in the world and collaborate with people. People are where the reality of your next job, your next experience will be. So you just have to get good at going out and talking to people and getting their stories.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit, there's some parts of the book that are a bit scary, right? It involves taking a certain number of, not only challenging conventional wisdom, but just taking a certain number of actual risks, like bias towards action.
Because you have to do something, and that can be risky. And we find that a lot of people describe themselves as stuck. A lot of times they're stuck because they're successful. We've met a lot of folks who are successful lawyers, but they don't like it anymore. But they think they're stuck because they can't change, it's too late, or because they'll never be able to repeat the financial success they have. And so our whole model is, okay, that may be true, but you can take a small step. Mm-hmm. You could have one conversation over coffee with somebody about something that might be interesting to you. Start with curiosity, have a conversation, and then see if that conversation turns into something you could actually prototyping experience around.
Right. Can we focus on this chapter? Because there's a whole chapter on getting unstuck, which really interested me, not for any particular personal reason. But I think,
you have a friend.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I think a lot of us can relate to feeling stuck in our jobs, in some aspects mm-hmm. of our lives. So if I feel stuck, how do I use a design approach to get unstuck?
Well, of course, it depends on what you're stuck on. Right. So am I stuck on, I don't even know what I want to do next? Am I stuck on, I'm not even sure what is working for me? You know, then one tool would be this thing, the Good Time Journal. You know, so actually being able to figure out what it is in my life that really is giving me energy, is really giving me enthusiasm, and what is not, what are the activities that work for me or not work for me? If I'm really stuck on, I'm not sure which direction I want to pursue, then I've got to go out and start doing some of what we call these life design interviews to find out what is it really like. So usually when I'm stuck, there's something holding me back, and I got to go understand that. Or there's something in front of me I'm scared of, and we, again, lower the bar, make a small step forward, you know, and find a way to get from where you are, not necessarily to the end, because usually people are stuck trying to jump to some outcome, mm-hmm. and it's too hard, it's too big, it's too ambiguous, it's too something. So don't go for that. Go for a smaller thing that's more accessible so that the risk is lower.
You know, designers get stuck all the time. I mean, because we're always working on something we've never done before.
Right.
That's what people hire designers to do. So designers have developed a whole bunch of ways of getting unstuck because we just know that's part of the game.
Yeah.
You get stuck and then you can brainstorm, you can mind map. And people don't brainstorm that well, so we give them better ways of brainstorming so that they can actually imagine solutions. And we do a thing we call the Odyssey Plan because your life is a journey. It's an odyssey. And we say there's not one of you because this is the other thing. If you're trying to plan that perfect next step, it's not probably going to work because there's more than one possible next steps for you. So we say do three, and there's something magical about three. If you look at the creative literature, if you brainstorm on three things, you get better ideas than if you brainstorm on one. So brainstorm three alternatives for your lives. And then with curiosity, look at those alternatives and say, what would I be interested in experiencing right now that I could do, like literally, I could do this week. And so when you set the bar really low, and then you have a success, and then you do it again, and you do it again, psychologists have demonstrated this desensitizes you to the fear of being stuck, and it gives you a sense of, they call it self-efficacy. I just say accomplishment. I've made a bunch of small steps. I'm feeling a little more confident in my ability to come up with something. And, you know, do it again, do it again, do it again. Set the bar low and clear it. We're not for the big master plan and I change my life and then everything's right. better, because that almost never works.
Yeah, because one of the things that comes up in the book is how often we sort of short-circuit ourselves because we have this fixation of, like, I have to find the right idea. I have
and
to
the
find
one right
the one
idea. Yeah.
right idea. And so you bring these kind of design approaches like prototyping and ideating and sort of playing with different ideas.
Designers never go with one idea.
Yeah.
Never. At Apple, we had hundreds of ideas before we did the laptop. I've seen the box of prototypes of mice that they, you know, hundreds and hundreds of different versions of it before they settled on something that they thought was at least the best for that moment. But the other thing is, that's what a mouse looked like in 1984, but mice don't look like that anymore. In fact, we don't hardly even have mice anymore. So this is the thing about life. It's going to change, and you need a process that grows with you and helps you adapt to things as they change. I mean, you could have a very successful career, and then that whole career could just disappear because the industry changes or technology changes. That certainly happened to me. I know Dave's had a couple industries drop out from under him. So being adaptive and being creative, right? Everyone wants to be more creative. Be more creative about how you create these futures, and you're just going to have an experience of your life being a lot more fun.
Yeah. But how do you do that? How do you ideate, as the term goes, or come up with those new ideas without censoring yourself?
The image a lot of people have of the term brainstorming is you get together with a couple of people around a team, and they've got some nice food, and there's a whiteboard and a whole bunch of Post-it notes. And we have all these crazy ideas, and there's a whole bunch of colored Post-it notes all over the wall. And then you take a picture of the Post-it notes with your iPhone, and then you leave the room, and you feel really good, and that's it. You're done.
Yeah.
And then eventually somebody erases the picture off the iPhone, and nothing happens. That is not brainstorming. That's sort of random ideation and Post-it wastage.
Right.
The next steps after that are, okay, what do all these ideas maybe cluster into some different categories. Those categories actually have an insight. Those insights can be turned into something we want to learn more about. That then leads to some prototyping possibilities. That's where having brainstorming goes somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways you can get unstuck is use some of these ideation techniques like brainstorming, which is where you do that together with other people in a team. So I can get unstuck by getting help. Or do mind mapping, which is sort of a graphic mental association technique to allow you to get beyond your initial idea. But these are techniques to help you silence that internal critic. Mm-hmm. And half the job on having ideas is recognizing you've got one. Oh, I'm stuck now. As soon as you know you're stuck, you're halfway home to being unstuck.
Right.
Because you go, oh, I'm stuck. I need to try something else.
You're listening to Spark from CBC Radio 1. I'm Nora Young, and this time I'm talking to Bill Burnett and Dave Evans. They're co-authors of the book Designing Your Life. We've been talking about applying design thinking to our own lives, particularly at those moments when you feel stuck in a rut, something that happens to all of us, surely. But not designers, right? They're so creative all the time. I bet Bill and Dave have got life all figured out. Not so fast. Dave shared his own story about feeling stuck.
I was profoundly struggling with this when I was an undergraduate many, many years ago in college. And so I found I did not know how to come up with the answer, what do I want to do with my life? And the people I asked for help, not on getting what I wanted, lots of people said, I'll help you get what you want. What do you want, young man? I go, I don't know. They go, oh, well, when you figure that out, you let me know.
Right.
But the figure it out part was entirely left to you. And I had no idea how to do that. And no one, frankly, no one was really very helpful. And I thought universities ought to be, and parents ought to be, and grown-ups ought to be. We're sort of criminally negligent at that. You know, frankly, 200 years ago, society was better at it than we are today. Mm. So I've been aware of that. And then noticed as I went through my career, everybody else is having the same problem too. And everybody seems to think their life's pretty important to them. And everybody wouldn't mind being a little more competent at figuring out what to do with it. Mm. So I figured it out the hard way myself. You know, I really wished I could have taken the course we now teach. That's one of the reasons I teach it. And then finally, when I get a chance to teach, first at Berkeley and then at Stanford, when Bill and I collaborated. And not surprisingly, it went well. We think the material is really good. And frankly, we're not bad teachers. But the reason the class works is because everybody really has the problem and really wants to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out design is, first of all, doesn't everybody want to learn to be a little more creative? Sure,
sure.
That'd be great. If while I'm doing that, I ended up with some neat ideas for my life, that'd be an extra bonus. And so we put it in this design framework, one, because I've been in all these office hours and I'm talking with my design students. And I'm going, why don't you just brainstorm on that problem? Or why don't you just make a mind map? Or why don't you just, you know you're stuck, do what we always do. But something about life, you know, they couldn't take their design experience and move it to their life experience.
Yeah.
That was one thing. But the other thing is, we don't want to be in a big university like Stanford. You don't want to be telling people the answer. You know, what you should do is this. That's not appropriate. So design is a very neutral methodology. The only value system in design is we never design anything to make it worse. We always design to make it better, right? So we're always moving forward. And we're trying to make an incremental improvement or a real innovation, right? In products, you do both. In your life, you can make incremental improvements or a real innovation. I'm going to stop being this person. I'm going to start doing this. And that could be about your profession or just about your personal life. A lot of times when people make their three Odyssey plans, they don't change what they're doing. They optimize the job they've got, but they bring these other things that were kind of parallel in their world, but they had forgotten about them. Mm-hmm. They bring them back into their lives, and that energizes them and enriches their experience. Mm-hmm. So if you come away from this feeling, hey, I'm a little more creative. Hey, I think I've got some, muscle developed around coming up with new ideas when I get stuck, and I have a way of sort of testing things in the world with real people. You're good. That's really all we want you to get out of the book. It's not a 1, 2, 3, your life is better system. It's just try these different tools, use some of these ideas, get rid of some of these dysfunctional beliefs, like you're supposed to have it figured out, and there's only one, so don't settle for something less. If you get that, you're fine. And then you can use any of the tools anytime. It's not a system that has to be worked in some particular order. Mm-hmm. People are too complicated. We don't believe in these, three steps to an epiphany. That doesn't really work.
Darn. One of the things that I noticed early on in the book is there's a sort of dashboard technique that you have where you look at the different sort of main aspects of your life, like your work and your love and play and so forth. And I was kind of doing this and I suddenly looked at it and I thought, there's like almost no play in my life. And
That same conclusion.
Yeah, that startled me. And then the second thing that startled me was, how did I not know that there was no play in my life? Like, it's a pretty obvious thing. How much of this is actually about kind of just tuning into yourself and about self-awareness in a way?
Oh, a lot of it is. I mean, our favorite question is, what do you notice? Do this exercise, then what do you notice? Hmm. You do the dashboard, and what do you notice? So the whole point
And you noticed, hey, there's no play in my life.
Right.
What happened?
Yeah.
That's important.
So it's really pay attention. A lot of the tools are tools to give people a vehicle to get access to stuff that they didn't know they knew.
Mm.
You didn't know that you knew that your play was short because you just hadn't had a chance to look.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons that we hear back from people that they find the book doable, and that doability leaves them kind of hopeful. I think this might even work. You know, what a concept. The reason being, what we're trying to do is give people just that one little advantage, that one little lever that allows them to either take a step or capture an insight. It's not that you have to come up with this incredibly hard to imagine idea that you couldn't think of. The truth is, it's probably already in you. We just want to give you tools to get it out.
Yeah.
I think the reason people find it useful or they can think they can actually do it is it's human-centered. We used human-centered design to come up with...
It looks like the world they live in.
Yeah, to come up with ways to get humans to try stuff. The four things on the dashboard come from positive psychology. The happiness guys, Martin Seligman and that whole group, finally realized, well, happiness wasn't enough. You need connection to people. You need something bigger than yourself. You need a mission. You need to be engaged in the world.
Now, you notice in that section of the book, there is no diagram that says, and here's the healthy, happy portfolio.
Yes.
This is what your dashboard looks like when it's right. Mm-hmm. That would be shooting on people. We don't shoot on people.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, you're the expert on what, in fact, balance or an appropriate portfolio of the components of your life looks like at a moment in time. One of my older sisters got her PhD quite late in life. She's working full-time running a graduate school, and she's going to school full-time getting a PhD. By the way, those were 400 miles apart. And so she called up all her friends and said, I'll be back in 6 years.
Right.
Literally, she was completely whacked out, doing nothing but studying and nothing but being a manager for 6 years. And that was a completely unbalanced life. Three of the dashboard things were blank. Mm-hmm. It was all work. But that was exactly the right thing to do for that six-year period of time. It was a compromise that made sense for her. That was a healthy life according to where she was going to eventually try to go.
Yeah.
There is no right answer other than according to you.
You can't do that forever. Right.
No.
You can't be that out of balance forever.
But, I mean, what are the limits here? I mean, it's just true that some people are just dealt a crappy hand of cards, or some people just have very constrained life choices because of things that are not their fault.
Oh, absolutely. Again, we get asked all the time, well, isn't this really just for young people, or isn't this really just for elite students at elite colleges who have lots of choice and powerful networks? No, it's for people who have lives and any degree of freedom whatsoever. We are not pretending. There's no magic wand here. Reading this book will not give you Aladdin's lamp. It will not give you a pony. There's no magic. It starts with exactly where you are. We are receiving feedback from people who are now working with this, with people coming out of prison, with vets suffering from PTSD. One of our colleagues went on a project to explore using this with community college students who are all working people. They're working full time and going to school at night. Most of them are immigrants or second generation people, very different from a Stanford student or a Yale student. And yet they all are finding it useful. The question isn't, is somebody who's less constrained got more degrees of freedom than you? Yes, they do. The question is, what degrees of freedom have you got? What's the space in which you can do some design?
Mm-hmm.
If you can redesign something, you start to begin to imagine yourself as a creative person. Once you start imagining yourself as a creative person, you start to see, hey, maybe my space isn't as small as I thought. And maybe with this one change, when I move to that spot, there'll be a completely different set of constraints for me there. So everybody has the ability to do that. And it doesn't really matter whether you're successful or not successful, or blue collar or white collar. It doesn't matter. Everybody's got some room to move.
Bill and Dave, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Bill Burnett and Dave Evans are co-authors of the book Designing Your Life. You have a chance at winning a copy of the book. Just head on over to our website, cbc.ca/spark. We've also got a video with Bill's four easy steps to designing your life, as well as links to some of the helpful tools Bill and Dave mentioned.